Welcome back to the convention, everyone, for this final session of a Sunday afternoon. And haven't we had a great 2.5 days so far? Well, this final part of the day is given over to BCA matters, and we'll have three short parts to the session. The first will be that we will deal with the remaining recommendations that were submitted prior to the convention. We'll then have the opportunity for a question and answer session of BCA board and management, and particularly through Emma as our CEO and myself as president, but we'll involve other directors or senior staff as the need arises there. So please, if you have questions, save them to that part of the afternoon, and then we'll deal with them then. And then finally, we'll say a few words and thank a few people for this great weekend. I'm about to ask Emma to take us through the first of our recommendations. Emma, can you just, is it easy for you just to tell us what the three subject areas were so that we know?
Before we do any of that, could we hear from Sally?
Oh, okay. I'm terribly sorry, Sally.
So Sally, for those of you, for those of you who don't know, is our New South Wales ACT coordinator. And Sally has been working really hard on a recommendation which was adopted by the New South Wales ACT Convention, which relates to the development of camps in Australia. So I'm just going to hand over to Sally and ask her to speak briefly about where that's at, because I think part of these sessions need to be about updating you on what's actually happened with the recommendations that we currently have before us. Otherwise, you kind of think, well, why would I bother recommending anything if they don't do anything? So, Sally.
Thank you, Emma. So for those of you who did attend our New South Wales ACT convention back in October, we had a discussion there about camp, and a lot of members were able to reminisce and share their positive experiences and memories about attending camp throughout their childhood and youth. And as a result of that, a recommendation was put forward that we investigate the possibility of developing a similar program within Australia. Over the past 6 months, a camp working group has been established. That's led by member Tian Taylor and also consists of myself, Graham Innes, Jackie Armstrong and Geordie Howe. And we, at this stage, are doing a lot of research around the current camps and programs that are available within Australia. So we're looking at the different services and activities that these camps offer, the different opportunities for peer support, but also the leadership of these camps and the proportion of staff that are blind or vision impaired, and the impact that has on an individual's ability to participate in the camp, and also the experience and the skills that they gain from that program. So we'll continue to research those camps, as well as in the coming weeks, we will be releasing a survey for all of our members, plus anyone from the blind vision impaired community. And that will look at people's positive experiences of camps that they have experienced so far, as well as what they would like if we were to establish such a program. We'll also follow that up by running a series of focus groups. These will be smaller, more in-depth meetings with numbers of people across the country, where we will talk about these issues in greater detail and drill down into some of the finer details. From there, we will create a report that will summarise all our findings, and we will look at the possibility of establishing such a program that would be available to us in the future.
Thanks, Sally. That's really useful information, and I think it's really important to say that, as I mentioned this morning, we are still working with the Enchanted Hills camp in terms of sending people to that. And also to say that whilst this recommendation originated in New South Wales and the ACT, it is our long-term intention to make sure that these sorts of opportunities are available to all Australians who are blind or vision impaired. So I guess it's a bit of a watch this space and make sure that you participate as much as you can. That's probably it. John, do you want me to...
Thanks. So, Emma, if you could perhaps just give us the titles or the running titles of those three recommendations, and I just then want to check whether anyone else has a written recommendation that they want to put to the meeting. Now, I don't want a whole lot of bright ideas, but if someone has a properly worded recommendation, we might have time to deal with it. So, of course, yesterday we dealt with the recommendation about the blindness service provider expectations policy, and we dealt with the recommendation from the Sydney branch around pedestrian concerns, and particularly silent motorised vehicles on electric vehicles on footpaths and so forth. The third recommendation is accessibility requirements for public procurement of ICT, and that comes from Blind Citizens Western Australia. Number four is access to publicly funded screening programs, and Lynn Davis put that forward. And oh yes, there is a fifth one.
Yep.
And number five, establishment of employment-related special interest branch, and Lauren Henley put that one. Is there anyone else who has a formed recommendation to put to the convention? Excellent. Okay, then we'll deal with those three, and then we'll open up for question and answer. So recommendation number three was accessibility requirements for public procurement of ICT from Blind Citizens Western Australia. We are finding that one of the biggest obstacles for blind and vision impaired people to find and keep a job is the inaccessibility of the information and communication technology used by government departments, the organisations they fund, and private businesses. Blind Citizens WA has Blind Citizen WA thus recommends that BCA lobby the Australian government, national, state and local, Australian governments, national, state and local, to implement, and there's a standard quoted, it's ASEN 301549, accessibility requirements suitable for public procurement of ICT products and services in all procurement of ICT. Furthermore, as more and more activities are not conducted online, such as banking, purchasing, are now conducted online, such as banking, purchasing tickets, completing forms, and as the web content accessibility guidelines have been updated to WCAG 2.1, which now better recommends people with vision impairments, Blind Citizens of Western Australia also recommends that the Australian national, state and local governments adopt the WCAG 2.1 guidelines to ensure that websites are as accessible as they can be. Now, someone from BCWA, would you like to move that?
Yes.
Thank you. Can we make sure we've got radio mic people in each part of the room? And yeah, thank you. Can we get a microphone? Who was it, Erica?
No,
Zell. Zell, sorry, Zell. Yes, Zell.
Yes, so as Chair of Blind Citizens WA, I move that the recommendation be adopted by Blind Citizens Australia.
Thanks, Zell. I'll take a seconder and then I'll come back to you to speak to it. Seconder? Name, please. So who was seconding?
Christopher Sims.
Thank you, Christopher.
Christopher Sims has got a patent.
That's three in a row. Sondra Wibley, you're being outdone as the seconder. Zell, would you like to speak to your recommendation?
Yes, we're finding that there are people who are not able to secure jobs because the ICT in the workplace is not accessible, or people who are already in employment find it very challenging to keep their job when their ICT is updated and upgraded and it is no longer as accessible as it used to be for them. So this is actually an issue of livelihood. It's an issue of education as well, because some of the systems that are purchased in the education system are not accessible. Some of the websites used in the education system are just absolutely awful, and it's just setting a very, very bad example to others in not just the procurement of ICT, but also in the standard of websites that are being used at the moment.
Thanks, Sal. Chris Edwards, are you in the room? Is Chris Edwards in the room?
has gone.
That's a shame because...
Susan, are you Susan, in a position to speak about Vision Australia's work in this area? Or can I put you on the spot?
Microphone to Susan, please.
The short answer is not really, because I haven't been very across this element of our work. But I guess what I was going to say is in the implementation of this recommendation, perhaps some dialogue between organisations that have done stuff in this work. Vision Australia certainly has been one of them. But Lauren Henley did an amount of work on this
when she
worked at the Human Rights Commission. So I think there's some, sort of strands that probably could be knitted together when implementing this policy.
Yeah,
recommendation.
That's right, Susan. We already have been working quite closely with Vision Australia to support the work that they're doing, the very good work that they're doing in this area already, which I think Kate Begley's been leading. So that's kind of already happening, but I think it certainly would be good to have this recommendation to support the continuation of that work.
Can I also add...
Hang on a sec.
Sorry, this is Zell again. Can I also add that I am aware of other organisations who are working on this. There is the Aussie Way program. There is Intopia, I know, are working on it. There's also, I'm fully aware, ACAN is also pushing this as well. So I think this is a really good opportunity to, I know the partnerships are developed, but to really strengthen these partnerships.
Agree.
Thanks, Zell. Look, I am going to move us on, and I'm not going to take other speakers in favour unless someone wishes to speak against. Is there anyone who wishes to speak against the recommendation? In that case,
we want to finish up.
So in that case, can I put the recommendation? Those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Those against say no. I declare that recommendation accepted and certainly will be taken up. And thank you for the discussion around it, because that helps to inform the boards and the staff process taking it forward. Emma, you've found your place in your braille.
Yeah, I'm all right now.
Off you go with recommendation number four.
So this one is...
Because this is the long one.
about access to... I just have to say it's lucky I wasn't reading the one before, because when we got to the AS number, of course my braille device just put a Z in there for AS, so I would have become very confused. However, access to publicly funded screening programs, which Lynn Davis put this recommendation forward, so it reads... that the BCA board develop an advocacy strategy aimed at increasing the access of blind and vision impaired Australians to publicly funded screening programs for conditions such as bowel cancer and breast cancer.
I'm going to stop it there. Lynn, there is a rationale which we're more than happy to read, but would you prefer that we read that, or do you want to speak to it?
I would be very happy if you read it.
Okay.
So can I take it that you're moving the recommendation? Can I have a seconder? Thanks, Sandra Wibley. Okay, Em, if we can read the rationalisation.
And I really like that you spell program properly, Lynn. I've just got to say that. Sorry. Publicly funded mass screening programs have become an essential part of community health and preventative medicine in all countries. In Australia, some of the better-known screening programs have been aimed at the early diagnosis and treatment of such conditions as bowel and breast cancer, but there are many others. Unfortunately, there has been little attention paid to the accessibility of these programs to people who are blind or vision impaired. The lack of access takes many forms, including limited availability of information about the existence and purpose of the programs, non-availability of forms relating to consent, medical history, etc., in accessible formats which can be completed independently, and the difficulty of completing required procedures, for example, in bowel cancer screening, in non-visual ways. The consequences of our community, the consequences for our community are significant. If the argument in favour of screening programs is that early diagnosis and treatment save lives, and the rationale for public funding is to make screening available to everyone, then the arguments must surely be extended to barriers other than cost alone. In the case of people who are blind or vision impaired, this means focusing on access barriers such as those referred to above. BCA could work with health authorities in all states and territories and the Commonwealth to identify access barriers in screening programs and to advocate for ways of removing these barriers. And there endeth Lynn's rationale.
Thanks. Lynn, would you like to add anything?
I think...
Microphone, please.
I think that says it. And I'm totally out of passion this afternoon, so... but, there's one thing I would want to add. I've referenced two particular screening programs, and they're ones that kick in a little bit later in life, or in midlife, really. But actually, probably one of the very earliest publicly funded screening programs was for babies a few hours old, There are many others. So I think it's a whole-of-life thing. And I think it's really important to identify parts of the population that are in a significant way excluded from what is supposed to be a universal benefit and a lifesaver and a life changer.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lynn, and thank you for your work in putting that together. Is there anyone who wishes to speak against the recommendation? If not, I'm not going to prolong the discussion. I put the recommendation. Those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Those against say no. I declare the recommendation carried, and it's certainly something that will go to the board. The fifth recommendation, I am prepared to put to the meeting in its current form, but after I have a mover and a seconder, I do want to make a comment about process in relation to this. Emma, can you read it, please?
Yeah, sure.
This one came from Lauren Henley, and of course Lauren's not here, so we'll be looking for someone to move it.
Yeah. This is about employment, and it reads that the BCA board considers establishing a national special interest branch for members who are currently in employment. This would provide a much needed peer support opportunity to allow people to discuss challenges, strategies, tips and tricks that are unique to the work environment. That's very short for Lauren Henley.
She knew when we were going to be considering.
Known. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I just want to say, is someone prepared to move that way?
Yes.
Sorry, who was that?
Joanne.
Thanks, Joanne. And a seconder?
I'll second.
I think Stephen...
I think
Stephen Belbin beat you that time, Christopher. I just want to say that we need to deal with expectations here. It's not the board's place to establish a branch from scratch. I think what we would do in implementing this is to call for an expression of interest among members who were keen to form such a branch. The establishment of branches, of course, is endorsed by the board, but we've learnt the hard way over the years that there's no point in trying to establish a branch if there isn't a groundswell to do it. Mm-hmm. I expect there is here, but I just want to be clear on expectations.
Yeah.
Does anyone want to add anything to this discussion, or will we just simply put it to the vote?
Oh, hi, it's Katrina Taylor.
Yes.
Can I just ask, firstly, did Lauren's recommendation say for people who are currently in employment?
Yes.
Right, I'm wondering, and it's unfortunate Lauren's not here, about amending that, as in, because I'm irregularly in work, so does that mean I can't?
I can't join.
Yeah.
No. I think I know what the spirit of Lauren's thinking was, because I had a conversation with her about it. And I think what she was trying to say is that we talk a lot about unemployment and finding employment, and what I think she was trying to say was we want to have a space for people who are working. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be working constantly. You might be sporadically in and out of work, but you need to have... Her point is about discussing experiences of being in work and being in the workplace and those sorts of things. So I don't think it would be a problem for you to join, Katrina.
Okay, yeah. Well, thanks for clarifying that, Emma, because I'm thinking, like, as someone who's always in and out of work, to be in conversations where you can share tips and learn from somebody and go, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Absolutely.
I can implement that in my next job application or whatever.
Yep.
I guess that's what I was looking at, rather than I can't work at work, so I'm just going to take over the list
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
Thank you. Is there any other explanation needed? Yes.
John, it's Chelsea. I think... it sounds like it would be more from a peer support angle because I know there's a lot of services out there, and I think that's really important to emphasise that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
We've got one more question.
One more, yes? I haven't got a microphone to you.
Yep, we do.
Are we live? Okay.
No, it's not working. Hold on.
It's turned on.
Yeah.
It's 11
minutes,
number 3.
We've got mic number 3 up, Dale. Try again now.
Testing.
Yeah.
That's
okay, we're good. Okay. So it's David Morrell. I'm not sure if I'm going to throw a fly in the ointment or whatever, but just to propose a small amendment, perhaps rather than people who are currently working, people who are working or seeking work, which would take care of what Katrina's talking about, and also perhaps a broader cohort who might...
David, I think that the board understands that sentiment. I don't think... We don't formalise these as resolutions, so I think that in putting it forward, the board hears that discussion.
I did wonder about the process part of it, so I thought I'd better throw it in.
Yep. That's fine.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, David. Okay, I'm going to put that recommendation to the meeting. Those in favour?
Aye.
Anyone to speak against? Or anyone against? Silence is deafening. That's terrific. Well, thank you very much. Now, a final call. Has anyone any other formed recommendation that they want to put to the meeting? If not, that's good. And thank you for being so prompt in dealing with those 5 recommendations. They do form an important tool in the board's keeping in touch with what you, the members, seek from the organisation. And I would hope that, without getting totally out of hand, that the number and the scope of these recommendations can increase in the future, so that we're hearing a diverse range of needs and aspirations. And I think as our mandate broadens through the work of groups such as the Cultural Diversity Group and others, that we would look to have recommendations coming forward that specifically support the various subgroups within that category. So great work to be done there. Okay, we've got about 20-25 minutes. I should explain that I am pushing the finish by 4:30 at the absolute latest, because we have a very short turnaround between the close of this meeting and the barbecue function, which will be in this room tonight. And again, the hotel have to fully reset the room, and on top of that, we've actually got to start and pull down some of our technical equipment and so on and so forth. So I want to maximise that gap between the two parts of the day. But we do have about 20-25 minutes for questions and answers in relation to, I guess, really anything relating to the functioning, the operation, the governance direction, those sorts of things, where the organisation is going. This is your opportunity, and for those people who are still with us on the internet, please use the text messaging service if you have a number. I'm going to ask to help the roving mic people to make sure that people who have a question, please put your hand clearly in the air, give us your name and a question, not a statement of belief.
So okay, we've got hands going up everywhere at the moment, so right, I'm going to ask you all to be patient with us.
I think, Naomi, we might start on this side of the room and then work across.
Okay, brilliant.
This way. Yeah.
Duncan.
Just a quick question about strategy. At what point will we start talking about class actions? Oh, sorry. Sorry, Duncan. Sorry, that was a bad one of mine. Duncan from Hobart. So at what point will we start talking about class actions for the 2 cases of discrimination that we're talking about this morning? And who would we be potentially targeting, or will we be leaving that up to members regarding the inaccessible communications of the NDIA, but also the age discrimination which is happening, which I think BCA could have a pivotal role to play in?
Duncan, we've actually looked at group or class type actions in relation to a number of our advocacy matters. And we haven't had strong encouragement to go down that road in relation to the Disability Discrimination Act and things that have flowed from that. We have supported and will continue to support a number of representative actions. The process needs to be that members have to take the matter forward. BCA can seek to be joined to an action. And Graeme Innes, I'm going to come to you next. But the advice that we have had in a couple of these cases, not particularly relating to the NDIA, but more generally, is that class actions aren't really the way to go because of the individual circumstances that's around particular cases. Graeme, do you want to add anything from your experience in the disability area around this?
Graeme's outside at the moment.
That's all right. I'll just make a comment. Graeme can comment over a drink. I'm sure he'd love to. However, what I would say, Duncan, specifically in relation to the NDIA, is that I probably up until maybe 2 weeks ago was pretty much ready for us to seek to get complaints lodged formally with the under the DDA. However, about a week ago, I met with the NDIA. I've heard of what they're planning to do to fix the problem. So up until now, I've just been hearing, yeah, we know it's a problem. We'll get it sorted. We don't know how we're going to fix it, but we'll get it sorted. Now I'm hearing we've got a plan. We've got timeframes. You know, we've got all this in place, and we want BCA to be part of actually testing the solution and making sure that we haven't missed anything. So that's a very different conversation to what we've had in the past. So it's not that BCA is shying away from going down the complaints path. And as I said, I was quite ready for us to do that. But I think we've now got to give them a chance, now that they are actually doing something and they've got a project plan, we've got to give them a chance to fix it. But I tell you what, it's not going to be a long chance.
No.
Because I've pretty much had enough of it, and I know that all of you have too. So, you know, watch this space, I suppose, is what I would say. What was the other issue that you referred to? Was it the Albert?
The aged care
discrimination, and if BCA could help with any support in a... Yeah. Class action's probably not the right word,
no,
but
no,
some sort of case.
I know
case.
What you mean. There are definitely things that we need to do, and it's one of the reasons that, as Angela said, we're establishing the aged care reference group so that we can actually have some conversations with members about what action we should be taking, rather than BCA just arbitrarily making decisions without consulting you, without consulting affected members. So... certainly that's an option that's on the table. The issue about the aged care system is one which is actually not new in terms of disability service provision. The 65 age cutoff's been around for
1986.
A long time.
It was introduced as part of the Disability Services Act.
That's why John's here. I think it's not new. We've got to remember that. It's become much starker. The contrast has become much starker, and it's terrible. And nobody thinks it's a good thing. But we've got to do what we can to equalise the system, because I don't think we're ever going to actually get rid of this age 65 cutoff.
Okay.
It's just not going to happen.
Thanks, Emma and Duncan. Next question, please. Doug, with a microphone, please.
Yeah, it's on. I can hear you.
John, it's Doug from Hobart. Just a very quick piece for housekeeping. We have one spare spot for Mona tomorrow.
If we still have that. Okay, thank you.
So if anybody's interested, please go and see Tony at the break.
Thank you. It won't be the break. It'll be at the end. Okay, other questions?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Hello, Martin Stewart.
There's a voice we haven't heard all weekend.
Who's Martin?
I've worked in the accessible technology area, and if anyone wants proof of that, just come up to my room. It's written on the David Wright Award. Thank you for putting it there.
That's okay.
As such, I think this is such a large area that keeps changing. Apps, for example, they become accessible with an update. Yep. They're inaccessible very often. notwithstanding the funding issue, so we all know that is a major obstacle, would VCA ever consider having an advocate whose sole duty would be to deal with digital access?
Do you want me to respond?
Yes.
Yes.
Seeing you've got to draft the budget.
The answer is a resounding yes. And in fact, you know, we have actually considered it, and the only thing standing between standing in the way of us doing it is funding. But I absolutely think we need one. I think, though, that we are incredibly fortunate to have Ricky Chaplin, because Ricky is really, really, really tech savvy by necessity as much as anything else. And he loves the phone system. Have I mentioned that? But we are really lucky to have him, because not only is he really tech savvy, if he doesn't know, he goes and finds out. He's like a dog with a bone. So whilst we don't have a dedicated tech advocate, and I agree, Martin, I think we need one, at the moment we're very lucky that we do have Ricky. But it actually goes to a broader issue, and that is that we know that we are vulnerable in terms of our advocacy staffing. We have one advocacy officer, and if Ricky got hit by a bus, I'm going to say won the lotto tomorrow, then we'd be in a bit of trouble. So we are trying to generally find ways to, through things like our mentoring and leadership programs and other opportunities, to mentor people and support them to become advocates, so that we don't have that vulnerability. But certainly a dedicated tech advocate is on our list of priorities.
Thanks, Emma. The comment that I heard, pots and kettles, was well made, and I did appreciate it. Because it's very true. Next question.
No, it's not. Just.
It is working.
Can I ask the mic runners, please leave the microphones on?
They are.
Okay.
They are. They just keep getting turned down.
Okay. Go.
Sorry, it's Kirby, Emma, and John. Had to search my brain there. I actually. Being as I'm a very new member and don't know many people apart from my fellow Tasmanians, I suppose I'm kind of asking this from, well, not from a naive point of view, but from the point of view of not having been a member at all for long. How does BCA work in terms of not necessarily younger people getting into boards and things, but how does it work in terms of getting people who want to learn how to do things, like myself, as in, you know, advocate for people but can't advocate for themselves? How would you suggest that we learn to go about this? Because, I mean, I'm passionate about people and animals and many other things. And I'm passionate about helping and wanting to help, but I don't quite know how to help myself completely. Mm. But that's the thing for me to learn. So I'm just wondering, not necessarily how you can teach, but how you can help me so that I can help other people, if that makes any sense.
I totally understand what you're saying, and it's a good question. And look, you know, we try to help each other as much as we can through things like conventions. It's one of the reasons why we have them. But we also, it's also one of the reasons why we've formed a Tasmanian branch. And, you know, I think the best thing that you can do, Kirby, and I know you already do, so this is not in any way a criticism, but the best thing that people can do, if you want to actually be involved and you want to see the organisation fulfil its mission in terms of helping you to help others and helping you to learn so you can do that, is to get involved with the branch. And do what you can to encourage others to get involved, because if we have a strong branch and, you know, we can do social activities, peer support activities, advocacy, whatever the branch decides it's agenda is, then that's a really good way. The other thing is, you know, we've as we said before, there are things like our email lists and other communications channels, and so keeping up to date with them is also really useful.
Emma, we've also been fortunate to have funding that's allowed us to do some of this work in a little bit more depth. But it's sort of been territorial, hasn't it? Do you want to just touch on those projects, the ILC?
ILC project.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? Yeah, Sally's going to talk about Sally's that. She's much better qualified.
Microphone's on, Sal.
Yeah.
Do you want to
talk about the work we've done? And the podcast, maybe?
Okay, yeah. So a couple of months ago, we were fortunate enough to receive ILC funding in New South Wales, the ACT, and South Australia. The reason we only have it in those states is because they were the only states that had it available at the time. But we did receive funding there, and we have run a series of projects. Many of you were involved in our peer mentoring training that has just finished. That was led by our project officer, Naomi Barber. That is soon to be followed up with by some leadership development training. It will start in the next couple of weeks. It's going to focus on a lot of those skills around leadership within an organisation, leadership within community, leadership in not-for-profit boards and other organisations like that. And we're also creating a series of Life Ready podcasts. So these podcasts focus on the stories of members who may not necessarily have, you know, competed at the Paralympics or climbed mountains, but they just have really interesting stories. So member Steve Richardson is recording those for us at the moment. And if you have any questions about how they might work, you can speak to Rocco, who's going to be featured in one of those podcasts. But they will be released within the next month or so. And they'll be followed up with a chance to get to know the interviewee of the podcast. And those series will conclude with a session on also getting to know Steve and a little bit about the background and how he went about putting those podcasts together. And that's just to give us all a bit more of a chance to get to know some of our members and to, yeah, build on those things that we all have in common.
Thanks, Sal. That's a terrific update. We've got time for a few more questions. How are we going across the room?
John, it's Michael Simpson. My question really to you and the board is around the future direction of BCA. We've heard through a number of presentations this weekend, both from BCA and blindness agencies, about the positive working relationships between BCA and blindness agencies, and that is certainly part of the picture about getting it right for our community. We've also seen the positive benefits of the recent coming together of Blind Citizens Australia and BCNSW, or what used to be the Association of Blind Citizens of NSW. So my question really to you and the board is, given that we do see the benefits of a stronger consumer sector, are there any plans to work more closely and develop better relationships, if you want to use that euphemism, with other consumer organisations, particularly in the blindness sector in Queensland, South Australia and the ACT, for example, Canberra Blind Society?
Thanks, Michael. There certainly is an intent to develop partnerships, whether they be bilateral or whether it be a group arrangement, across as many blindness service provision organisations as possible. I guess we made a starting point where we could, and as I said yesterday, that work with Vision Australia goes back quite some years, as you and many others know. We had the opportunity to expand that to Guide Dogs Victoria and then through Guide Dogs New South Wales and Guide Dogs Queensland. I can tell you that we are currently in discussions with Guide Dogs Australia as the global representative of all of the state guide dog organisations to pull those MOUs and matching arrangements in Western Australia and South Australia and, of course, Tasmania is linked to the Western Australian organisation, but to bring those organisations together and to actually have an agreement with Guide Dogs Australia as the representative of all of those bodies, so that we're doing that. And although those negotiations are only at an early stage, the discussions are being well received and encouraged by the CEOs across the board from the guide dog organisation. So that's a healthy development. We have had some initial discussions with the Royal Society for the Blind in South Australia, and in fact, we actually went to Adelaide and met with Rob Dempsey and at that stage the CEO of Guide Dogs South Australia. There is some reform work that we need to do, I believe, in relation to what we might call the next tier of organisations, and I'm thinking of organisations like Blind Welfare in South Australia, Canberra Blind Society and so on and so forth. I pick out those because we used to, as those who have been around longer will know, we used to have a system of organisational membership with some of those organisations. I think that's outlived its usefulness in our constitution, so we need to think how we best tackle that. And it's a commitment that the board has made during the term of my presidency to continue to develop that work. One of the things that we are keen to do, though, is to do it in a way that doesn't simply add to the administrative workload of having to report separately to 10 or 12, 14 different organisations around the country. So in the context of the work that's being done around bringing the Australian Blindness Forum and Vision 2020 Australia together, we did put forward a proposal for a national partnership that hasn't been fully endorsed yet. Some agencies were more strongly in support than others. Some agencies felt that they would lose out that because they would lose their edge as a larger or more influential organisation. But we'll work through those issues. And in terms of managing the administrative side of this, you know, we really want something that brings benefit to both but doesn't simply create a whole bureaucracy that we've got to service. Michael, does that cover the sort of ground that you were looking to?
Yep,
thank you. Okay. Emma, did you want to add anything? Okay. All right.
It's Chelsea Bartlett here.
I just
had a question. Obviously, you know, there's been talk on Friday and throughout the weekend about the Cultural Diversity Action Group and all the things that are happening with that. I'm just wondering what the board's strategic thinking is around that and whether you're looking at strategies to include. Obviously, we've spoken before about Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people and people from
Let me make a comment and then... Joanne, let me make a comment and then perhaps ask Joanne Chua if she wants to add anything. I guess the two major features of our current strategic plan, beyond our commitment to advocacy and those sorts of things, are around broadening our membership so that it is better representative of the community we serve, and supporting people to develop their skills as leaders, as mentors, as advocates and so forth. They're the two underpinning strategies that are guiding the organisation, and our cultural diversity group is an outcome from that. It's just getting started, but Joanne, restarted, that's right, because we did have an earlier attempt. And Joanne, as one of our directors, is heavily involved in that area, as are Stephen Belbin and other directors. Now, a final question from the floor.
Susan. If it doesn't go, I'll bid on it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say I've been to a lot of conventions, and I think we've almost got it right with the balance between sitting down and standing up and having the dinners brought to you at lunches and morning teas at the table. I think that having the bags was really good, and having the two options to stand and sit is good because it doesn't inhibit Anna. Mingling.
Thanks, Susan. That's greatly appreciated. Anna, can you come over here? I want to start and thank people and to really acknowledge the work that's gone into to this convention. Firstly, we took a different approach with the convention, and Emma Bennison's run away with the notes, so this is going to be fun. We took a different approach this year and formed a convention reference group led by Emma as our CEO, and we took the process of inviting expressions of interest for firstly for topics that people wanted to see covered, and then to actually call for expressions of interest of interested people and groups to make presentations. I think as we saw in the future of work session yesterday, that process has really worked. And it leads me to really acknowledge all of those people who have been part of this convention program. Our speakers, our session chairs have really worked hard to make sure that we've been on time. They've presented vital and timely information, and I'd ask you to show your applause, to show your support for those people. I also want to acknowledge the fantastic work that's gone on behind the scenes. And if someone can get a radio microphone to Emma, I'd like her just to tell us who was on that reference committee that put the program together. Sorry, Naomi.
Okay, I've just opened... Oh, God, there we go. I've just opened a different document, but I think I can
just
remember.
The reference group at the stage.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's easier. Certainly Vanessa Ransley and Doug McGinn were the two Tasmanian people, Graham Innes, Mick Baker and Stephen Belbin. Please tell me I haven't missed anyone. No?
Yeah. Yes, let's thank those people for their great work. I next want to...
Sally. Sorry, Sally. Oh, my God.
Sally, and, of course, Emma herself. Sorry, sure. Sal.
Oh, don't worry about me.
I do want to add to that my thanks and the board's thanks to our staff team and say not only how pleased I am that they were all here and have contributed so well to this convention, but I get very few opportunities to acknowledge the work and the dedication that our team put in. So in thanking them for their work at convention, let's also thank them for their ongoing work throughout the whole 12 months. which reminds me to say, don't call them Monday.
Actually, don't
or
call
in fact,
next
don't
week.
Call this week unless it's desperately urgent, because we have decided to close the office for the next few days to give people the opportunity to recover from what is an exhausting involvement here at convention.
Emma from the hotel and her staff again.
Thanks, Doug. That's timely then for me to say how fantastic the team have been here at the old wool store. Emma Bennison and I met firstly with Emma Fetke about 6 or 7 months ago, and we were playing the game that we were looking at a number of venues and we might choose this one. We already knew damn well that we were coming to the old wool store because Emma had run a conference here before. But we did the right thing and we looked at some other venues and decided very quickly that the old wool store offered us everything that we could possibly want. And that was not just because of the space or the dining room menu or those sorts of things. It was because of the intuitive way, Emma, that you and your staff actually have approached this event and how quickly you've learnt about how to deal with a mob of blind people from all times of the day to grumpy breakfast to over-enthusiastic late evenings when the bar is closing and people don't want it to. So, Emma, I want you to thank all of your team. I did have the opportunity to meet the CEO yesterday, Ben Target, and let me just tell you that the success of an organisation depends on its leadership. And to be in this room last night and see the CEO pushing the vacuum cleaner around and leading his staff and being just part of the team, and Alan, the operations manager as well, really gives a message. And that message is conveyed, and all of your staff, and there are a number here in the room, should be very proud of the contribution that you've made to the success of this. And certainly the next time Doug gets us back to Tasmania, we'll come and see you again. So, ladies and gentlemen, can you thank the hotel staff? I did speak it in Spanish. And then, of course, we've added to that by pulling together, and I thank Doug for his great work and Emma for dragging her family down from Queensland, by putting together a fantastic team of volunteers. And again, my observation has been that more than I've seen it in the past, the volunteers knew what needed to be done, worked harmoniously with the hotel staff, and again have actually done us proud. So can we thank our volunteers?
John,
yes, Em?
John, before... Before we, well, we already have, but I think it's really important that we acknowledge the work that particularly Anna, Naomi and Angela have done in terms of the volunteers and making sure that people knew what they were doing, knew where they were going and knew what needed to happen. It just has made such an enormous difference, I think. So thank you. Yeah. All right, well, we already thanked Don.
Yeah. You've heard us talking over the weekend about our sponsors, and I think that we all realise that both in terms of their financial support and their in-kind contribution, organisations like Vision Australia, Guide Dogs Australia through its various branches, Visibility, and then Intopia, IRA, Bindi Maps... Have I forgotten anyone?
The National Disability Clearinghouse for Education and Training.
Thank you. And of course, the Department of Social Services, because without them, some of you wouldn't be getting home. But we've had a great team of sponsors, and that really has helped the event because, again, they've contributed in far more than just their final support. I want to recognise a group of people who have sat over in the room on the far side there and have diligently put together the technical aspects of this event. Dale Simpson and I arrived here on Wednesday about 5:30, and I don't think Dale has stopped for more than 2 or 3 hours at any point over the period. This is a massive technical setup because we are trying very hard to take our convention to our membership right around the country. And to do that, you've got to have the facilities in place. It took 2 days to put all of that together, or a day and a half, plus the bits and pieces that we've put in early mornings and late nights to get things fine-tuned. We've got to pull it all out now, but that's a different story. But I want to thank particularly Dale. I want to thank our radio and internet hosts, Stephen Jolly, Fiona Woods, assisted by Graham Innes. I want to thank Jonathan Craig and Vaughan Benison, who have put together the nightly radio highlights packages that have gone out. And, of course, Vaughan's also and Jonathan have captured all sorts of material that they'll use in New Horizons and otherwise. So can we thank that team of people who sit back there and we don't see a lot of them? And finally, what would convention be without all of you? So I think that the contributions, both formally and across the weekend from the group gathered here and the around 50 people who have been listening at peak times, dropping to about 25, 30, do you know that when I checked this morning, we'd had 115 individuals listening to us at some point on the internet stream. As I've said, we can't measure as easily the numbers listening to the radio broadcasts. But I do want to acknowledge Vision Australia Radio and their manager, Conrad Brown, and the RPH Australian Network for their great work in making the program available to RPH stations around the country, and particularly thank Vaughan Benison, who one of his many hats is as manager of print radio here in Tasmania, and they have broadcast pretty much all of the live proceedings over the last 2 days. So fantastic work and given us the opportunity for our members to engage. So thank you to them, and thank you. Give yourselves a clap for your involvement in this convention. Now, finally, we went through the era of the Doug and Dan show to close the convention, where they used to take the piss out of people like myself. last year, we asked Steve Richardson to write a a piece that summarised the convention in lyrical form. I understand we've got something a little bit different. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the BCA Singers.
In Hobart's old wool shire, a flock is gathered round to shear the fleece of burden so we can break new ground. We'll spin the thread away and take pride in our choice, and we'll always be united when they hear us raise our voice. Cates and echolocation, click, click, tap. And the thought guides in Ira to help bridge the gap. We won't be led like sheep, and unique will be our race. Our diversity and strength will make the world a better place.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and with workshops we'll formulate our schemes to bring our woolly troubles out and realize our dreams. And when the day is all over, we'll put our differences in tar. But I hope those lovely Ira folks will help us find the bar. Names and echolocation, click, click, tap. With dog guides and Ira to help bridge the gap. We won't be led like sheep, and unique will be our space. Our diversity and strength will make the world a better place. Our diversity and strength will make the world a better place.
And what a fitting way to finish. And on that note, Stephen Jolly, it's back to you for our internet and radio audience.